Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, July 29th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the weekend's box office numbers. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, before we actually get into the box office numbers, we got to talk a little bit about Deadpool and Wolverine. That's probably what we're going to be spending the majority of this episode talking about anyway. But I wanted to mention a couple of articles that we have up at Slash Film. One of them you wrote is called "The Deadpool and Wolverine Rumors and Reports That Never Actually Happened." And I don't want you by any means to run through the entire list because that would take the entirety of this podcast episode. But I did wonder if there was one favorite rumor or something like that that ended up not coming to pass that you discovered when you were doing your research for this article?
I wouldn't say, because so much of it had to do with, like, because there was such endless speculation about potential cameos or appearances because everyone knew this was going to be a multiverse thing. So much of it was, like, casting stuff, right? But I think some of the more interesting stuff I dug into was the different versions of the movie that didn't come to pass. And, like, in sort of considering that, okay, if there were four or five different versions of this movie that were at least considered, well, there probably would have been different cameos, characters, things in those different versions. So for me, like, digging into the different versions of it was sort of the more interesting one. And the one that interested me the most was actually from an interview we did with producer Wendy Jacobson. And that was, like, the potential reshooting of, like, Thor 2's entire first act. And that would have eventually pivoted to something else that would have been Deadpool 3. I found that fascinating. So, like, the idea that there were a lot of different ways to approach this, like, that was more what I think interested me the most in sort of digging into this.
You put together a bunch of the rumored cameos and stuff, and one that I had never heard before that I was very amused by was the suggestion that potentially Dwayne Johnson could play a version of Apocalypse in the movie, which was just kind of cracking me up partially because there's actually kind of a Dwayne Johnson adjacent DC joke in Deadpool and Wolverine in the final cut that we actually see. And then also just kind of thinking about behind the scenes, what it would take to get something like that to actually happen, and, like, all of the chaos surrounding Black Adam and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, that I was just, my head was kind of spinning thinking about that as, like, a potential possibility. I have no idea how valid that rumor was at the time or whatever,
right?
But that's part of the fun of that article, I think, is just, like, looking back at the full scope of, like, all of the what we now know is nonsense that people were kind of tossing around at,
right? And like, in digging into it, the one thing that seemed, like, if I were to guess, I'm guessing Ryan Reynolds at least called The Rock at one point to gauge, like, is there something here? And I'm guessing it probably just didn't work out, but it seems like maybe there was something, whether or not it was Apocalypse, because that's the thing, there were other rumors, right, of, like, who maybe he might have appeared in some way, shape, form, whatever. Like, it just, so yeah, I you know, who knows? But yeah, there was tons and tons that although I will say, picturing Dwayne Johnson as Apocalypse is, like, you know, it does sort of, like, that seems fitting, but, like, yeah, it's never going to happen, but it is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess speaking of, like, different versions of the movie or versions that didn't happen, there's one other sort of, I guess, newsy kind of Deadpool and Wolverine thing that I wanted to mention before we dive into the box office, and that was an early version of Deadpool and Wolverine was apparently going to be, like, a whole different thing based on a deceptive marketing plan. So I think Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman went on Hot Ones, the internet's interview show. Everybody probably knows what Hot Ones is who's listening to this podcast. And they mentioned that Deadpool and Wolverine was originally going to be filmed as a fake movie called Alpha Cop. And the idea was to shoot a fake film that was intentionally bad, that was a sort of buddy cop movie between Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman. And these characters would have been sharing one brain, and together they make the perfect cop. And Reynolds said it was meant to be kind of horrible. Like, 10 people in America would go to see this movie on opening weekend, and 5 minutes into the movie, the Marvel logo would flip up and it would actually be Deadpool and Wolverine. The problem is that if you managed to get down to the last minute and it got blown, it would just be heartbreaking. And he's talking about, like, the surprise aspect there getting blown. What did you make of this, Ryan? Is this something that like you kind of wish we could have seen?
I wish with every fiber of my being they could have pulled this off. I am not even sort of being funny. Like, this would have been, we would talk about this forever. And like, I think this is a shocking amount of self-awareness on Ryan Reynolds' part. He knows he was in movies like RIPD. He knows, like, it wouldn't be impossible for him to be in a bad movie. Like, and I think, I can't even imagine, like, him lying his way through that press tour, because what seems incredible about this is the full idea would be, no, no, we're going to commit to this the whole way through, and nobody knows until the movie opens. Like, you probably wouldn't screen it for the press. Like, could you imagine if they pulled it off? How incredible that would have been. I mean, it would be insane, because then you're sort of relying on like this gimmick sort of being the entire marketing for a new Deadpool movie, but it probably would work. Like, it would just be a fascinating, you know, situation.
I was going to ask you about that. Like, obviously you would lose out on probably a ton of money in the opening weekend, which seems to be a huge, I mean, I don't know. We don't need to talk about how important opening weekends are. That's kind of what we do every Monday anyway. Right. But like, I wonder if you think that by blowing that, if this could be a valid strategy for a project that is as big as this, because then you would have nothing but word of mouth. And then it would almost be like a delayed ad campaign. Like, yes, I guess you would have to spend some money up front to market Alpha Cop as something that looked legitimate enough that people wouldn't sniff out that it's a fake, you know? So you would have to commit some resources, some monetary resources to an advertising campaign that looked halfway decent, I guess. But then once the truth would come out, I think everybody who showed up to see Deadpool and Wolverine, which is a lot of people, as we're about to talk about, would flock to the theaters to
see.
They
would flock to
Alpha
Cop.
Then,
yeah, but it wouldn't be Alpha Cop, because then at that point what probably happens is the only people that could be let in, and this is where it would get blown, is you would have to let the theater owners know. Like, they would have to be aware, because it would be, what would be mean and actually not possible is if you didn't tell them what it was, and then, because then theaters are going to get flooded with foot traffic within hours of that being revealed. Like, literally, people are going to, and that would be crazy, right? But so the theater owners would need to be prepared for that. They would need to have staff on hand. Yep. Because, like, imagine all of a sudden $200 million worth of business comes rushing in across the country and none of the theaters are prepared for it. Right. So, you know, then all of a sudden you're changing lobby posters. Like, you have this coordinated effort to, like, you know, it'd be really cool. Like, it seems impossible. Ryan Reynolds is absolutely correct that there's no way to pull this off, but it would be pretty amazing. And, you know, I
what do you think about the financial part of it, though? Like, do you think that would be a viable thing that, like, I don't know, like, because it seems like a smaller movie probably wouldn't do it because it wouldn't have the same juice, right? Like, the delayed gratification kind of thing and, like, the swarm of people coming in probably wouldn't be worth all of the deception and all of that stuff unless it's something as huge as this.
I tell you where this could work, and this is me just totally going up book. So I'll tell you the financial. Let's answer your first real question first. Is that, like, could this work for a $200 million, like, a Deadpool and Wolverine had a budget in the $200 million range. It was a proper MCU movie in that way. So let's assume that that's what they try to do. You could, so usually they're probably, I would guess, $150 million marketing spend, you know, give or take. Like, so you could take, you could market Alpha Cop like you would market like a mid-budget Blumhouse horror movie, right? Or like a the first John Wick. Like, you could spend $20 million, say, and do like a pretty comprehensive campaign, but not like a blanket campaign. And people would be aware Alpha Cop was coming out. People would be aware that you would probably drum up a certain amount of business that opening night or whatever. But then after the Thursday night previews or whatever, that's when people would be like, holy shit, you know, and that's when your $100 million marketing campaign kicks in, right? That's when those lobby posters are revealed. That's when the theaters who knew this was happening, they get in on it. So it's there's a way to do it. you know, and then that's where your delayed marketing campaign, as you sort of put it, kicks in, and then you have Reynolds and everybody else go do the press tour, talk about how they pulled this off, blah, blah, blah. Then you sort of get like, okay, what does opening weekend look like when you pulled a hat wool over people's eyes? What does the second weekend look like? It all becomes a fascinating question at that point. I think what you could do conceivably, and this is just me speaking about something I would like to see, but I could see this happening. Reynolds had pitched a version of this movie that was like the $10 million Sundance movie, he kind of jokingly called it, which was just a road trip movie with him and the cab driver Dopinder. And I still would like to see that version of the movie. And in my head, there's still no reason you couldn't do that movie even within the confines of the MCU, because it would seemingly be playing so outside the sandbox, it wouldn't matter. And after the success of this movie, I almost can't help but wonder, why not give Reynolds $10 million or whatever, like pay him his salary, then give someone a $10 million budget to literally go make that movie. Don't tell anybody about it, because you could probably keep it small enough to do it. Then you advertise that as a different movie. And then suddenly you have this like art house version of a Deadpool movie that secretly plays in theaters. And because you spent so little on the movie, the sheer curiosity of the pulling the wool over everyone's eyes would more than justify the cost. So yeah. I think that's where you could do something like that. But even without the secrecy, I still feel like if they did that movie, you could easily just out of curiosity make that work. But anyway, that's just a whole other conversation entirely. But I think that's where that would almost be more viable. But, you know,
yeah,
I think obviously
really fun.
It can't be Alpha Cop now, obviously. And the other problem is if Ryan Reynolds ever makes another movie that seems like suspiciously bad, everyone's going to think it's something else. So like he can't do this now, which sucks because he kind of blew it. But
yeah, it's also worth mentioning that Dan Trachtenberg wanted to do this exact thing with Prey, the Predator sort of prequel movie that he made a few years ago, because he was developing the movie for, I think it was like 4 years, and then Deadline blew it in the story of like this movie that he was working on. I forget what the original working title of the movie was. Skulls, I think it was. And it was just supposed to be like, it was described in the press, early press, as just like a story focused on like Native American or indigenous characters, like, you know, facing a challenge or something like that. And it was supposed to be like this interesting thriller. And he tried to keep it secret that there was going to be a Predator involved. That was like the plan from the beginning for that movie, but it got blown. So I think Ryan Reynolds is right when he says there's no way that the secrecy could hold up. But that's just an interesting modern example of somebody trying and failing to make this happen.
Yeah, I think filmmakers dream of this sort of thing. And I think like the closest we ever got to it was 10 Cloverfield Lane, where they didn't reveal it until like a month and a half before it came out. But even that, you still had to be like, hey, this is happening.
The remake of the Blair Witch Project from whatever that was, 2016 or something.
So what happened is that was at my first San Diego Comic-Con in 2016. I went to the first screening of what was then called The Woods. Yeah. And what happened is they didn't even tell us before. So they just started the movie. And you realize somewhat early on, like, oh my God, this is a Blair Witch movie. And then as soon as the movie was over, like, they're like, hey, surprise, it's Blair Witch. And then you even went out back to the lobby and the posters they had that said The Woods on them were changed to say like Blair Witch. And but that was months before the movie came out. So that was in July.
The timeline on that. Okay.
Yeah. So that was in July. And then the movie came out in September. And gotcha. I remember this very specifically because I loved the movie. And then like all the reviews came out and it was like people kind of hated it. And then I remember having to wait till September to watch it again to be like, was I fooled? And then I still stand by that movie, but that's another conversation entirely. But like, I just remember. So because I only remember because I was in that audience and I was like, that shit was like crazy. But anyway, so that was close, but it was still several months removed.
Yeah. 10th Cloverfield Lane, man. Dan Trachtenberg again. Like that.
Dan Trachtenberg again. I didn't even put that together.
Okay. So let's take a break and then we'll come back and actually get into some box office talk about this stuff. All right. So Ryan, why don't you run down the top 10 at the box office? I think we all know that Deadpool and Wolverine is number one, but hit us with the rest of it.
Well, I know what everyone wants to know about, which is, you know, did Fly Me to the Moon, you know, do well this weekend? But no, seriously, look, obviously Deadpool and Wolverine was the story. And It actually made even more money than was reported. So it made $211 million domestically in its opening weekend, which was even more than the $205 million, which was previously reported. And just to be clear, the previous record for an R-rated movie was like $132 million with the first Deadpool. So we're like 80 million above that.
Beyond. Wow.
Yeah. So we'll get into that more in a minute. But so Deadpool and Wolverine, obviously the number one movie now. But things get interesting from here. Twisters held reasonably well with a $35.3 million second weekend, a 57% drop. This is the first time ever that a movie made more than $15 million well a movie opened to $200 million or more. Does that make sense?
So yeah, any other time, yes.
Any other time a movie has opened to $200 million or more, no other movie in the top 10 made more than $15 million. So this is the first time that that's ever happened. And then in number three was Despicable Me 4 with $14.2 million. So that's also interesting because, again, you had two movies almost clear that benchmark, which is pretty cool. So it was a big weekend overall. Number four at Inside Out 2 with $8.3 million. That movie is now at $1.5 billion worldwide and just past Top Gun Maverick. Number five is Long Legs. We won't talk about this a lot, but Long Legs made $6.7 million in its third weekend, dropped just 43%, held strong again. It is now Neon's biggest grossing movie ever in North America, passing Parasite. A Quiet Place Day One at number six with $3 million. That goes to VOD tomorrow, so that one's going to start falling off. But number seven, we have Bad Boys Ride or Die with $1.3 million. Number eight, we have The Fabulous Four with $1 million. Number nine, we have Fly Me to the Moon dropping hard like a rock again, dropping another 77% with just $750,000. And then we have something called Rayan. I believe this is a Indian import of some kind. Made $453,000. I don't really know much of anything about this at all, actually. I don't know what this is, but so that
that's been like an interesting trend over, I don't know, I've noticed it a lot this year as we've been talking about box office stuff. There have been movies from India or specifically for starring Indian actors or like aimed primarily at Indian audiences that have snuck into like the 8, 9, 10 slots in a lot of the box office weekends that we've been talking about. And like you and I are like, what the heck are these movies? Like I've never heard of these kind of
they're
things,
being poorly but advertised, but RRR and some of these other movies really brought like an appetite for that, and like some of them have snuck into like the top five, like Pathan last year and some of these other ones. But yeah, this one seemingly didn't, you know, sort of break out in that way, but you know, it was there, it was in the mix. So that's interesting. It's interesting that there is an audience for it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And to be clear, that only played on 133 screens, so it had a 34, you know, like $3,400 per screen average, you know? So okay. Like, it's not like it bombed. It did well for the people it was intended to do well for. So,
yeah. Interesting.
But yeah, so let's talk about Deadpool and Wolverine a little more in depth, shall we?
Yeah. I mean, the thing you're talking about things doing well, and like the thing that I want people to understand is you wrote an article called Five Reasons Why Deadpool and Wolverine Obliterated the Box Office, which I think is a fair headline for the amount of money that film made. But there was something that jumped out to me that I just have to read right now because it kind of left my head spinning a little bit. So you said the latest entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe took in $233.3 million overseas, giving the movie a $444 million global start. That means it made more money in a single weekend than Black Widow, Shang-Chi, Eternals, and the Marvels did in their entire theatrical runs. That is very impressive.
Yeah, let's be clear. I'm not knocking those movies, but I just wanted to illustrate a point. Like, Shang-Chi was considered a big success in its day, particularly because it was, you know, under pandemic circumstances. Black Widow,
a lot of
we
these
all
movies
know.
Were.
Yeah, look, Black Widow, we all know, like, it went to VOD the same day it hit theaters. There was a lawsuit. It was not. But the Marvels, in an otherwise good year at the box office, like, just, you know, it did what it did. Like, I don't want to open that can of worms again. But, and also, the one I couldn't include, within a couple of days, this movie will pass the total of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which had a huge opening weekend last year. So, you know, we're talking about a movie, an R-rated movie that is going to pass the totals of I think the majority of the post-Endgame MCU movies in a matter of days. You know, other you know, it's gonna have a little while to go before it passes, like, you know, Wakanda Forever or Guardians 3 or Multiverse of Madness, but it won't be all that long before it overtakes Thor, Love, and Thunder, and, you know, then from there you just got the big guys. So yeah, I mean, that is helpful to illustrate a point. And to your point, it did make $233.3 million overseas. It pretty much had a global blanket opening, so there's not, like, a lot of territories for it left to open in. Like, it's just out there. But, I mean, you know, not to get too ahead of ourselves here, but with an opening this big, it has an A cinema score, a 97% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, unless it drops like a rock for some reason, and I can't see that happening, it's all but guaranteed to be a $1 billion movie. So, you know, it's probably going to pass Joker to become the highest grossing R-rated movie of all time. And, you know, again, I don't want to get too ahead of it here, but I mean, you know, we're looking at that comfortably happening. And we can say that confidently after a single weekend, which is wild.
And that's so bonkers to think about, because this movie is so insular. Like, I think you had a chance to see it. We haven't talked about the movie, you and I, yet. But, like, we did a whole episode on Friday all about the spoilers and stuff. I'm going to try not to spoil anything specifically about the movie. But just
let's broadly, not if we can.
Yeah. Broadly speaking, people know that there are a lot of cameos in the movie. And I would just say that, like, some of those cameos are pretty dang obscure, and, like, you know, you would have to be pretty in the weeds about movie news and stuff like that for them to hit you in the way that the movie intends. And say what you will about the quality of Joker, some people love that movie, some people hate it, whatever, that's a pretty easy movie to understand. You don't have to be, like, deep in Batman lore to understand what Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix were going for with that movie. So it's, like, a very easy to digest R-rated comic book movie for mass audiences to get, right? And the fact that Deadpool and Wolverine is probably, as you said, going to outgross that at the end of the day, when you look at the jokes and, like, the just the storytelling style and the differences between those movies, when you put those two up against each other and realize that Deadpool and Wolverine is probably going to come out on top, it's just kind of really, I don't know, it's kind of wild to think about.
Yeah, it's hard for me to sort of look at that with any sort of objectivity, because everyone knows, I've talked about it a bunch, I hate Joker. And I don't say that about a lot of movies. I just generally keep my mouth shut. But I hate Joker so much that I'm happy to talk about it. So for me, like, I saw Deadpool and Wolverine twice this weekend. I've kind of come to the conclusion that I absolutely love it. So, like, so for me, I'm like, okay, like, I'm happy about that. Like, it works for me. But also, I know there's, like, in our circles particularly, because audiences seem to love this movie, in our circles particularly, there's a little bit of, like, cynicism about this movie going on, you know, like, and whatever, like, I'm not here to have that conversation, but, like, you know, look, people, audiences really, really, really love these characters. And it's clear, like, I think sometimes there's, you know, these, oh man, people have been waiting forever to see Batman and Superman fight. And, like, yeah, kinda, you know, like, I think, like, you know, people like Batman and Superman, have they been waiting forever to see him fight? I don't know. I think, like, this was an example of, like, no, people have truly, truly waited a very long time for this to happen. Like, going back to X-Men Origins, which was not good. And that only further fueled desire for this to actually happen. So I think, like, there was an absolute palpable anticipation of this. And I think the one thing I would say to your point about, yeah, a lot of this is inside baseball, but my fiance went and saw it with me, and she hasn't kept up with all of this Marvel stuff all that much. She wasn't as in the weeds, and it didn't seem to dampen her enthusiasm one bit. She loved it. And she hasn't, you know, so I will say, yes, some of us, like, that stuff hits a little differently, but I think there's one I really want to talk about, but I will just say there's, like, one example of one that's very inside baseball, but I think what it does in context of the movie still works for the average audience member, because it's kind of funny on the surface anyway. So, like, I do think they actually, because Sean Levy and Ryan Reynolds, they all talked about, like, no, you don't need to have seen a bunch of movies to watch this. You need to have seen Deadpool, and that's kind of it. And, like, Deadpool and Logan. And I actually think, for as much as this was dealing with, like, the TVA and the multiverse stuff, I actually think they kind of walked the walk on that one. Like, I really do think that, like, sure, you might have benefited from Loki and some of these other things, but it ultimately, they told the story they needed to tell in a way that worked for most audiences. And I will say, I think that's pretty impressive. You know, sure, maybe you don't get every single reference, but I think the movie stands on its own 2 feet well enough. And I think the audience score, the reception, the increase from, like, you know, Friday to Saturday to Sunday, like, I think that kind of speaks to that. So it's pretty impressive, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's working for audiences. I think we can maybe quibble, or I can quibble anyway, with how well it worked creatively. You know, we'll maybe save that for a different day. But Ryan, it sounds like people are having a party at your place in the background there. I know you've mentioned that there's been a lot of construction going on at your place, and it seems like they're back in full force. So if anybody's wondering what the hooting and hollering going on in the background is, that's what that noise is. So
I apologize about that. I couldn't be closer to the construction that's going on at my, like, adjacent apartment complex. Like, I am literally, like, my apartment is the closest apartment to what I'll call the action. So I apologize, dear listeners, but there's not much I can do about it.
No worries. Yeah, so I guess the only, you know, one thing that we can talk about here is that the idea of putting Wolverine and specifically that character's name in the title of this movie was incredibly smart. And again, I feel like we can maybe have another conversation on a different day about, like, the creative value of that, or like the storytelling and narrative value of that. But just purely from a business perspective, which is what we kind of try to talk about on Mondays, this was just like a lights out decision, because audiences clearly love Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, and they were interested in seeing this character again, despite him having a perfect ending in Logan. Whether that was driven by curiosity about, like, how exactly they were going to do that, or whether people did not care at all about how that character was back, but they were just like, well, he's back and I like this guy, so let me go see this movie. That was just a really, really smart decision that I think, you know, cannot be undersold as part of the reason why this movie did as well as it did.
100%. And I also think that, like, what's smart is that people have, there's been enough stuff, like, even Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Spider-Man No Way Home, Multiverse of Madness, these movies that have done really, really well, that have explained the multiverse broadly to people well enough for them to understand that, like, okay, Logan happened, but other versions of Wolverine exist. Like, I think people sort of understood, like, that's probably how this is going to go, but I want to see how that does unfold. And I do agree that, like, you know, but, and you know, very famously, he said it a lot, like, Hugh Jackman was the one that called them. You know, they didn't beg him. He wanted to do this. And the only thing I'll say is, anyone can say what they wish about this movie. Hugh Jackman shows up. Like, he did not phone this in. And, you know, so he clearly wanted to be there. You know, like, I think it's evident on screen that he wanted to be there. And, you know, and I think that that resonated with people, like, getting to see him again in full force, you know, with Deadpool, like, it worked. And, yeah, I don't know. I think it's good that it worked, in the sense that it was an R-rated movie within the framework of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So it does encourage the MCU to probably take a risk in that way, right? Like, it does. I know it's another team up. I know it's going back to the well with Wolverine. But I also think, at the same time, it does give them license to potentially take other creative risks in the future in some ways.
Yeah, I don't know how risky it is, though, because the MCU has historically relied on including these major characters to kind of, like, juice audiences' interest over the years. Like, I was trying to think about this before we started recording. I share this with you as, like, a potential talking point we could hit on today's episode. Like, Iron Man popping up in Captain America 3, which was then changed to Captain America Civil War, and Iron Man appearing in the Sony Marvel Spider-Man movies, and then the old Spider-Man characters being incorporated into Spider-Man No Way Home. That was a big thing of, like, the same kind of thing, like, tapping into people's nostalgia and recognition for these characters that people love in other contexts. Hey, they're all going to be here in this movie. Same thing with Guardians of the Galaxy popping up in Thor Love and Thunder. I mean, after seeing that movie, we realized, like, how small of a role they actually have, but they were a big part of the marketing for that film and all that. And then now, obviously, Wolverine doing the same thing in Deadpool 3 and, like, scrambling the entire narrative of the movie, where it was like it all fell into place after Hugh Jackman came on board. You know, this is something that Marvel has been doing for a long, long time, and I don't think it's going to be stopping anytime soon. We're not going to talk about what happened at Comic-Con on today's episode of the podcast, but there's a big announcement that we'll talk about in detail tomorrow that proves that this tactic is still going to be used in major ways by Marvel going forward. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that at all, Ryan.
Look, I've been a comic book reader most of my life, and like in that way, comic book cinema is just mirroring what the comics do, you know, like, and I know that that can seem cynical cinematically, but it's sort of what I've become accustomed to with superhero storytelling for most of my life. You know, these characters do interact with one another, and they do come in and out of each other's worlds in different ways. And, you know, so for me, it doesn't like rub it, as long as the story works, it doesn't rub me the wrong way. Sometimes like it rubs me the wrong way when it doesn't work very well. Like, you know, so I don't, but like No Way Home worked really well for me. So like, you know, whatever. And the one thing I will say though, and I didn't touch on this yet, is that there is a bit of a scarcity thing that might have helped this movie a lot. Last year we had 3 MCU movies, and we've had 3 MCU movies most years for quite some time. This is the only MCU movie coming this year. The only Marvel shows we've had on Disney Plus this year were Echo and the animated X-Men 97. So I think there was also like a bit more anticipation for this. And I think that like there's a lesson in there about Marvel doing less equaling more. Like, you know, at some point more does become less if you just oversaturate. And so I do think there's a lesson here that Marvel and Disney really need to look at.
Yeah, I think, yeah, this is like the first step of them having learned that lesson, I think. And not, you know, who knows what they would have done had the strikes not happened and had the schedule not needed to be reshuffled and things like that. You know, the fact that this movie is the only Marvel movie that's coming out this year is not just the result of Bob Iger standing back and saying, let's make this decision. You know, there are other factors at play that kind of forced the hand on this one. But yeah, I think your point is well taken, and hopefully they do learn the right lessons from this. But I don't know, I'm not entirely convinced they will, but you know, who knows? Okay, so anything else you wanted to mention, I guess box office wise, or anything else about Deadpool and Wolverine before we start to wrap it up here?
The only thing I'll say is, you know, obviously, like we talk about with these big movies, we need to what the second weekend's going to be, right? Like, does this thing have like a, you know, Thor Love and Thunder 69% drop second weekend, or does this word of mouth carry over, and does this thing hold like crazy, you know, and do we have a $100 million second weekend, you know, like that, you know, that's what I think the next thing we need to really look for is. And you know, if that happens, you know, just how high is this movie going to fly? You know, worth pointing out right now that this movie now holds the 6th biggest opening weekend ever, you know, only behind Star Wars, The Last Jedi, The Force Awakens, Infinity War, No Way Home, and Avengers Endgame. So, you know, it's not just R-rated, like we're talking all time. So, I mean, the to say that this worked would be a dramatic understatement, and I'd be fascinated to see how far this carries out, and obviously what that means for the future of Deadpool and or Wolverine, because Reynolds at one point talked like this might be his last ride a little bit. There is no way. No. So I think that, you know, I think that'll be my curiosity, seeing how Deadpool and or Wolverine carry forth beyond this. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think that they're going to be incorporated, at least in small roles, in something like Secret Wars. But yeah, beyond that, who knows? Because like those movies are already sort of lined up and have dates and all that stuff, and we don't have any dates or any indications about what a potential Deadpool 4 might look like or anything like that. But yeah, you got to assume that those characters are going to come back in a big way, or at least a meaningful way to audiences. But yeah, a lot of question marks still about the future of what they might hold there. Any other notable takeaways from any of the other box office stories that we didn't really touch on yet?
Like I mentioned, Long Legs is the big one not to be lost in the conversation, that it is holding so much better than a movie like that would on paper hold. It is at 58.6 million domestic, almost 11 million internationally. So it's just at about 70 million worldwide. It's probably going to get to at least 70 million domestic, which is crazy. And depending on how the international numbers keep ticking in, it probably has a good shot at getting to 100 million worldwide. At which point I am willing to call it the most unlikely $100 million movie of the 2020s so far. So that's one thing I think that is just a really pleasant surprise amongst all of this. It's kind of crazy.
That would be great. That would be so cool if that movie was able to cross the $100 million.
Well, it's already at about 70, which again, for this movie is like, that's already amazing. Like that's great. And it's got quite a few markets left to open in overseas. So I do see it hitting that 100 mark. So I mean, it's just wild. Obviously we want to talk about Deadpool and Wolverine and stuff, but you know, even in and amongst this big franchise, you have a wholly original, uncompromised horror movie, you know, still holding its own. And I think that's pretty cool. So, that's the only other thing truly worth, I think, talking about.
Excellent. All right. Well, yes, come back tomorrow because we have a lot to talk about from Comic-Con and a lot more Marvel specific stuff. Some big announcements and stuff made over the weekend that we'll be digging into tomorrow. In the meantime, you can find more about all the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!